So a common sticking point in Lead Together organizations is the reality that legally, there isn't a lot of precedent for organizations that are shaped or intending to be shaped in a way that is more equitable. So Brent, how do legal agreements reflect values, and how can organizations go about adopting these agreements, whether they're legal or they're just a way of practicing for when the world finds itself catching up to this way of working?
So maybe to start, if we just think about how most legal agreements come to be, is one party drafts something, maybe they even have a boilerplate agreement, and then they send it over to the other party, whose lawyer then looks at it and starts. So if we think about from a values perspective, this idea that if we're leading together, then how do we step into legal agreements together? And what are the values that we want to bring with us? And so if we value partnership, then how do we bring partnership into the legal agreement space? And it starts long before paper is drafted or something is put on paper. It really starts with conversation and this opportunity for the people that are going to be engaged in the day-to-day living of the agreement to be part of the creation of that agreement. And the other thing that really stands out in the agreements that that really embrace a lead together values-based approach is this idea that it's not if we find ourselves in disagreement, but when we find ourselves in disagreement. And so legal agreements often, you know, have this, you know, really uncomfortable clause about agreement. And if we value relationship and we value being able to work through disagreements on an ongoing basis, how do we incorporate that? And so in the book, we talk about some great work that's been done in this space by others and very specific questions to ask each other to start the process and different ways to use language. So language has become very defining to, you know, when you're looking at a legal agreement, oh, this is a legal agreement because of the language, but it doesn't have to be that way. And so we explore that in the book as well. And so Travis, to build on that, how do values-based agreements differ specifically from traditional contracts?
I think you hit on a lot of the key points there, right? The natural language is the biggest giveaway. No more whereas and where to fores are in there. And most of that vestige is just that. It's vestige of old ways of doing things, of old English, of old Roman contracts. I actually love the work of Stuart Levine, and Brent, you're the one that showed me this, the Book of Agreements. And I've actually taken that and moved that into the practice where you start to use natural language. You start with the intention of what you're co-creating, and then you add in all the parts that are going to be useful, and they come out of the conversation. So you talk about the conflict as a natural process. What are you going to do when there is some inevitable tension about what people understood, whether it was spoken or not? And so, Susan, like this conflict resolution is such a key piece of these lead together agreements. Can you talk about some ways that self-managing organizations structure their agreements to incorporate dispute resolution?
Sure, I can give three examples. So the first example I'd like to talk about is in the context of Inspiral in decision-making, for example. So because we use consent-based decision-making process, which means that blocks are available to anybody in the network who is feeling challenged by a particular proposal. So in that sense, it's not a literal conflict resolution, but it's the idea of raising the closeness of the conversation. So moving it from being an online asynchronous conversation in Lumio to a phone call to a meeting with a larger amount of people, so that the coherence can be built that way. Another example, again from Inspiral, would be if there is conflict between two members or two contributors. Everybody in the network has a steward. And if one person is, let's say that I'm having a conflict with Brent, and you're Brent's steward, Travis, I would reach out to you, and or my steward would reach out to you, and there'd be a conversation between the four of us. And then if that doesn't resolve the particular tension, then that would go to a larger group of people who are sitting in a mediation circle. The last example I'd like to give is within Greater Than, my company, how these, the highest possible level conflict is baked into our constitution. So Greater Than is a stewardship-owned company with a golden share model, which means that a company called the Purpose Foundation actually holds a guardian share in the organization. So if there are conflicts between owners that can't get resolved, we have baked into our agreements this organization that will really be providing that mediation on the basis of the purpose of the organization. So those are sort of three ways at all different levels that we can bake values into agreements and create the conditions for us as we're practicing these things to reinvent what might become legal scaffolds moving forward.
That's really interesting on the golden share. How did you all pick the company that was going to hold that golden share for that dispute resolution? Because that seems like a key piece of the puzzle.
So it's an organization that just do that work, right? They're based out of Germany, and it came from a lot of research into the steward ownership model.
Amazing.
I like, a lot of the legal agreements that I've seen that do this really well. The first step starts with a cup of coffee. Let's just sit down and it's an agreement. It's documented. If we're not in agreement, we will sit down and share a cup of coffee and start the process. So it's just a different vibe than what you'd find in regular agreements. Yeah, nice.